Section 1. Listening. This section of the test has three parts. You will hear three recordings which you will listen to twice. While listening, answer the questions in the appropriate part of the test. Follow the instructions. When answering questions in the first and second parts, use the answer sheet labelled with a cross. When answering questions in the third part, use the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Now prepare the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Part 1. You will hear the first recording. For the following statements, 1 to 7, choose only one correct answer. Mark your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part one. Elizabeth Delcede is an attorney at Murphy & McGonagall, a law firm located in New York. Elizabeth, please tell us about your childhood and where you grew up.
Growing up in Los Angeles, I got my 10 minutes of fame as an aspiring journalist. Every Sunday, I would read aloud the front page stories of the Los Angeles Times to my parents. That sparked my interest in investigative writing. In my teens, I volunteered as a staff reporter and wrote articles for LA Youth Newspaper and other local and international publications. Now I look forward to making the news.
Was the move across the U.S. difficult?
2 years ago, I relocated to Manhattan from Los Angeles. In New York, my time zone, wardrobe, attitude, mode of transportation, and many other things changed. There are areas of this island that I still haven't uncovered, so I don't feel as if I have fully adjusted from west to east coast yet. And truth be told, sometimes New York feels like another planet.
Did you go to college? And if so, was being a Hispanic an advantage or a disadvantage?
When I attended the University of California in LA, the student body was pretty mixed, but there weren't many minorities in my classes. Spanish is my first language, but I succeeded in English literature, history, and even geography. Then I went straight to law school at the University of Minnesota. At the time, the dean of the university was the first minority dean of a top 20 U.S. law school. I could count on two hands the number of Latino students at my school, so I got involved in campus recruiting as a student ambassador, hoping that eventually more people who looked like me would be walking on the campus.
Can you please tell us about your career path, particularly how you got to your current position?
Apart from graduating law school and passing the state exam, being an effective lawyer, or more precisely, trial attorney, requires speaking in front of judges, clients, seasoned attorneys, and thought leaders. Criminal and civil trials, I went to all of them. There were times when I only had a couple hours to prepare for an official meeting, so making quick decisions and ignoring my nerves became key.
Please describe the things you do on a typical day.
I am a young partner at a new law firm in the most dynamic city in the world. Cases don't just get handed to lawyers and resolved by a judge. Attorneys have to figure out what the issues are, how to solve them, what they cost, and what timeline there is. The part I enjoy the most about my job is participating in my law firm's women's initiative. My business partner, Kate McGrail, and I co-head this resource group to reinforce support for professional women in the financial services industry, not just legal.
What did you learn the hard way in your career, and how did that happen?
Everyone will tell you to network, but no one explains what that means. I found it means getting to know the current and future decision makers of the area and engaging that group over the course of years. If you can figure out your suitable position in college, you are many steps ahead. I discovered it much later when I moved to Manhattan, where networking is a constant ritual.
What do you enjoy most about your job, and what are your plans?
The sweetest side of my business is working alongside the women who make up the financial service industry. They are immensely motivated, smart, good-natured, and helpful. These ladies inspire me all the time, and I feel lucky to be in their circle. As for my next steps, I would like to serve financial companies in Latin America or firms that take care of Spanish-speaking clients.
Now listen again. Elizabeth Del Cid is an attorney at Murphy & McGonigal, a law firm located in New York. Elizabeth, please tell us about your childhood and where you grew up.
Growing up in Los Angeles, I got my 10 minutes of fame as an aspiring journalist. Every Sunday, I would read aloud the front page stories of the Los Angeles Times to my parents. That sparked my interest in investigative writing. In my teens, I volunteered as a staff reporter and wrote articles for LA Youth Newspaper and other local and international publications. Now I look forward to making the news.
Was the move across the U.S. difficult?
2 years ago, I relocated to Manhattan from Los Angeles. In New York, my time zone, wardrobe, attitude, mode of transportation, and many other things changed. There are areas of this island that I still haven't uncovered, so I don't feel as if I have fully adjusted from West to East Coast yet. And truth be told, sometimes New York feels like another planet.
Did you go to college? And if so, was being a Hispanic an advantage or a disadvantage?
When I attended the University of California in LA, the student body was pretty mixed, but there weren't many minorities in my classes. Spanish is my first language, but I succeeded in English literature, history, and even geography. Then I went straight to law school at the University of Minnesota. At the time, the dean of the university was the first minority dean of a top 20 U.S. law school. I could count on two hands the number of Latino students at my school, so I got involved in campus recruiting as a student ambassador, hoping that eventually more people who looked like me would be walking on the campus.
Can you please tell us about your career path, particularly how you got to your current position?
Apart from graduating law school and passing the state exam, being an effective lawyer, or more precisely, trial attorney, requires speaking in front of judges, clients, seasoned attorneys, and thought leaders. Criminal and civil trials, I went to all of them. There were times when I only had a couple hours to prepare for an official meeting, so making quick decisions and ignoring my nerves became key.
Please describe the things you do on a typical day.
I am a young partner at a new law firm in the most dynamic city in the world. Cases don't just get handed to lawyers and resolved by a judge. Attorneys have to figure out what the issues are, how to solve them, what they cost, and what timeline there is. The part I enjoy the most about my job is participating in my law firm's women's initiative. My business partner, Kate McGrail, and I co-head this resource group to reinforce support for professional women in the financial services industry, not just legal.
What did you learn the hard way in your career, and how did that happen?
Everyone will tell you to network, but no one explains what that means. I found it means getting to know the current and future decision makers of the area and engaging that group over the course of years. If you can figure out your suitable position in college, you are many steps ahead. I discovered it much later when I moved to Manhattan, where networking is a constant ritual.
What do you enjoy most about your job, and what are your plans?
The sweetest side of my business is working alongside the women who make up the financial service industry. They are immensely motivated, smart, good-natured, and helpful. These ladies inspire me all the time, and I feel lucky to be in their circle. As for my next steps, I would like to serve financial companies in Latin America or firms that take care of Spanish-speaking clients.
Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. Part 2. You will hear the second recording. For questions 8 to 13, decide whether the statements are true, A, false, B, or whether the information was not given, C. Mark your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part two. Sully Page is a successful author, just like her daughter Libby. But it has not been an easy path. Sully will tell us more about it.
I never considered myself to be a storyteller. I didn't think I had the imagination or capacity to write a fiction book. That was my daughter Libby's department. From the age of 8, she would come home and write beautiful stories, and there wasn't a doubt that she'd become an author. Instead, I thought of myself as a journalistic writer. From 2006 to 2010, when Libby and her sisters were teenagers, I wrote and self-published a series of books about my life as a florist. Even when Libby was in the process of writing her first novel, The Lido, I never thought about trying it myself because I didn't have the confidence. I'd convinced myself that it wasn't the path for me. I was immensely proud of Libby, but I never planned to follow in her footsteps. Everything changed a year later when I woke up one morning with a story idea, and once I started, I couldn't stop. It was through that process that I fell in love with fiction writing. My daughters always encouraged me to explore my creative side. However, I wasn't able to get an agent for my first book, but I went on to write a second book in 2019, which got me an agent but no publishers. During the pandemic, I started writing my third book, The Keeper of Stories. Based on the idea that everybody has a story to tell, my novel follows the main character, who, like me, collects other people's stories until finally she finds her own. I spent a year searching for extraordinary stories from people around me, including my friends and my parents, before I started writing, so almost all the stories are true in some form or another. Some people find overnight success, but a lot of writers, like me, keep writing in the background, hoping to get a big break. As I wrote more, I learned the craft, and for the first time, I had a publisher interested in my book. I was thrilled. My dreams of becoming an author were coming true. Just under 2 years later, in March 2022, after numerous revisions and going back and forth with my editor, my book was finally published. The response has been breathtaking, and I'm so proud of myself. I've been working on this for such a long time, so it feels amazing to see that it's paid off. I love reading every lovely review, but one of the best comments I've received was from my friend Julie, who barely reads. She said, "I didn't know books could be that good. I wanted to go home every night and read. It made me laugh. But I have kept her words in my heart. I put off writing for a long time, but now I'm doing something I love."
Now listen again. Sully Page is a successful author, just like her daughter Libby. But it has not been an easy path. Sully will tell us more about it.
I never considered myself to be a storyteller. I didn't think I had the imagination or capacity to write a fiction book. That was my daughter Libby's department. From the age of 8, she would come home and write beautiful stories, and there wasn't a doubt that she'd become an author. Instead, I thought of myself as a journalistic writer. From 2006 to 2010, when Libby and her sisters were teenagers, I wrote and self-published a series of books about my life as a florist. Even when Libby was in the process of writing her first novel, The Lido, I never thought about trying it myself because I didn't have the confidence. I'd convinced myself that it wasn't the path for me. I was immensely proud of Libby, but I never planned to follow in her footsteps. Everything changed a year later when I woke up one morning with a story idea, and once I started, I couldn't stop. It was through that process that I fell in love with fiction writing. My daughters always encouraged me to explore my creative side. However, I wasn't able to get an agent for my first book, but I went on to write a second book in 2019, which got me an agent but no publishers. During the pandemic, I started writing my third book, The Keeper of Stories. Based on the idea that everybody has a story to tell, my novel follows the main character, who, like me, collects other people's stories until finally she finds her own. I spent a year searching for extraordinary stories from people around me, including my friends and my parents, before I started writing, so almost all the stories are true in some form or another. Some people find overnight success, but a lot of writers, like me, keep writing in the background, hoping to get a big break. As I wrote more, I learned the craft, and for the first time, I had a publisher interested in my book. I was thrilled. My dreams of becoming an author were coming true. Just under 2 years later, in March 2022, after numerous revisions and going back and forth with my editor, my book was finally published. The response has been breathtaking, and I'm so proud of myself. I've been working on this for such a long time, so it feels amazing to see that it's paid off. I love reading every lovely review, but one of the best comments I've received was from my friend Julie, who barely reads. She said, "I didn't know books could be that good. I wanted to go home every night and read. It made me laugh. But I have kept her words in my heart. I put off writing for a long time, but now I'm doing something I love."
Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. Now look at part 3. For part 3, you will need the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Please find and prepare it. Part 3. You will hear the third recording. Below, you can read summaries of the information numbered 14 to 20, which are in the wrong order. Indicate the order in which you hear the information by writing a number 1 to 6 next to the number that represents that information. Be careful, there is one extra summary. Put X next to the number that represents extra information. Write your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part 3.
Due to the pandemic, virtual meetings have become an essential part of modern businesses. Virtual meeting etiquette is a whole new ballgame compared to in-person meetings. To help you keep your meetings productive and professional, follow these 6 simple virtual meeting etiquette rules and tips. Rule number 1. Whether you're carefully taking notes or secretly chatting with your colleague, the sound of your typing is distracting. It's not only distracting everyone else in the meeting because your laptop's internal microphone is inches away from your keyboard, but it's also preventing you from devoting your full attention to the meeting. select a quality headset or use Smart Assistant that automatically transcribes meetings for you. Rule number two. One of the magical things about working remotely is the freedom to wear anything to work. It's the dream, right? Still, there's no reason to show your coworkers your pajamas or any home frock. Take a few minutes to throw on a clean shirt and brush your hair. The best part of actually getting ready while working remotely is that you'll put yourself in the right headspace to be productive. Rule number three. Your coworkers won't be able to hear your ideas or take you seriously when there is a pile of dirty clothes in the corner behind you. You also want to avoid looking like you work from the inside of a cave because of bad lighting. Adjust your work setup so that you face a window or are exposed to plenty of light. And make sure your background is professional. This means no beds in the background and no messy rooms or open closets. Rule number four. There's nothing more frustrating than hearing that alien echo noise from conflicting microphones. Save everyone from this ear-splitting madness by joining the meeting while on mute. Unless you live alone, your house is probably pretty noisy these days. Muting your microphone when you're not speaking gives other participants the ability to share their thoughts without distraction or frustration. Rule number five. When you enter a small meeting, around 2 to 5 people, announce yourself when you join. It can be awkward to hear the "someone just joined" ding, followed by silence. When you join the meeting, introduce yourself and say hi. Just make sure not to interrupt someone mid-sentence. Don't be afraid to project your voice, too. Your team will appreciate being able to hear you without having to strain their ears or turn their volume all the way up. Rule number six. It may be tempting to check your inbox or carry on a side conversation during a dull moment in a meeting, but don't do it. You might miss out on key information or an opportunity to give input. If you're using your webcam, use attentive body language. Sit up straight, don't make big movements, and don't let your eyes wander too much.
Now listen again.
Due to the pandemic, virtual meetings have become an essential part of modern businesses. Virtual meeting etiquette is a whole new ballgame compared to in-person meetings. To help you keep your meetings productive and professional, follow these 6 simple virtual meeting etiquette rules and tips. Rule number 1. Whether you're carefully taking notes or secretly chatting with your colleague, the sound of your typing is distracting. It's not only distracting everyone else in the meeting because your laptop's internal microphone is inches away from your keyboard, but it's also preventing you from devoting your full attention to the meeting. Select a quality headset or use Smart Assistant that automatically transcribes meetings for you. Rule number 2. One of the magical things about working remotely is the freedom to wear anything to work. It's the dream, right? Still, there's no reason to show your coworkers your pajamas or any home frock. Take a few minutes to throw on a clean shirt and brush your hair. The best part of actually getting ready while working remotely is that you'll put yourself in the right headspace to be productive. Rule number 3. Your coworkers won't be able to hear your ideas or take you seriously when there is a pile of dirty clothes in the corner behind you. You also want to avoid looking like you work from the inside of a cave because of bad lighting. Adjust your work setup so that you face a window or are exposed to plenty of light. And make sure your background is professional. This means no beds in the background and no messy rooms or open closets. Rule number 4. There's nothing more frustrating than hearing that alien echo noise from conflicting microphones. Save everyone from this ear-splitting madness by joining the meeting while on mute. Unless you live alone, your house is probably pretty noisy these days. Muting your microphone when you're not speaking gives other participants the ability to share their thoughts without distraction or frustration. Rule number 5. When you enter a small meeting, around 2 to 5 people, announce yourself when you join. It can be awkward to hear the "someone just joined" ding, followed by silence. When you join the meeting, introduce yourself and say hi. Just make sure not to interrupt someone mid-sentence. Don't be afraid to project your voice, too. Your team will appreciate being able to hear you without having to strain their ears or turn their volume all the way up. Rule number 6. It may be tempting to check your inbox or carry on a side conversation during a dull moment in a meeting, but don't do it. You might miss out on key information or an opportunity to give input. If you're using your webcam, use attentive body language. Sit up straight, don't make big movements, and don't let your eyes wander too much.
Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. The listening section is now over. Please stop working on this section. Now go on to the next sections of the test.